Thanks very much, Danielle. Thank you very much for inviting me to give this talk. So as Danielle said, I'm going to talk about a solver that I've been developing and maintaining since the past 4 years, starting within a collaboration between CMU and IBM. So let's jump directly into the problem we want to solve. We basically are interested in finding optimal solutions to something called a mixed integer nonlinear problem. It is one of the probably one of the most general types of problem you may think of. You have to minimize a nonlinear function f of x subject to a set of possibly nonlinear constraints and subject to the integrality of a subset of the variables. So if you think of integer programming, linear programming, conic programming, this is probably one of the most general ways to define an optimization problem. And in fact, the class of optimization problems that belong that this problem here represents is quite large. We only, in fact, make one assumption, and that's an extremely important one because that's the one that allows us to solve the problem itself. We assume that all the functions f and all the gi's are factorable, which is simply just a way to say that we sort of have the symbolic information on them, so we know how to write down their expressions. They are closed formulas, so they we do not compute their values by, say, running an algorithm or performing some computation or doing measurements. So we do know they are formulas, which are basically composed of variables, real constants, unary operators, and binary operators. Of course, we have that, given that this is a very general class of problems, if we impose that f is linear and gi's are all affine, then we get a classical, probably better known class of problems, the mixed integer linear programming problems. If f and g's are all convex, then we still have a non-convex problem because we still have integer variables, but we call it with some sort of abusive terminology, a convex MINOP. As I said before, we are interested in the most general case, which is a non-convex one, in which, once again, f might be nonlinear and non-convex, and gi's might be nonlinear and non-convex. The applications, and there's a bunch of them, are probably more of interest to the chemical engineering community. In fact, most of the algorithms and software produced for MINOP was developed by chemical engineers. So there's a bunch of very nice problems in MINOP. One of them is water treatment, which consists of designing water treatment systems in such a way that you minimize the total consumption of fresh water. And those both include discrete variables, so integer variables, because you have to decide whether a component of the network has to be used or not. And then you have nonlinear interactions between the components of the system, given that you may have heat transfer, which is regulated by exponential function, and so on and so forth. There's another bunch of very nice problems in chemical engineering, and there's another one in that is not exactly chemical engineering. It's portfolio optimization. There's many variants of the portfolio optimization problems. There are a few recent portfolio optimization applications where you basically have to include both non-convex constraints, and you also have to include fixed costs, which you probably, as you know, model with binary and integer variables. So they also are something you can model with the MINOP paradigm. I joined this community only 4 years ago, clearly, so I'm relatively young in the field. And there's a lot of people that worked on this problem before. There have been a lot of approaches that go under can be classified within the branch and bound class. So there have been a lot of people developing branch and bound methods for MINOP. There's been people like Grossman and Duran that developed other approximation, which is just a way of finding a linearization of a MINOP, of an MINOP problem. And there's also a bunch of software packages that have been developed in the past. Some of them are older than others. There's a probably one of the most well-known is Baron, which has been developed by the Wellman-Ani and Sahinidis when they were back in University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, which is a commercial software. I think you find it in the GAMS package and in another set of solvers. Another commercial solver is Lindo Global, which is of course in the Lindo suite of solvers. There is a couple of solvers that are mostly focusing on convex MINLPs. That is, they try to solve MINLP problems where the function and the constraints are all convex. So within the same framework as Qwen, there's Bonmin, which has been developed by Pierre Bonamy and others, and there's another group orbiting around the Argonne National Lab, that is Jeff Linderoth, Sven Leifer, and Kumar Abhishek, who developed Filmin, which is another solver for convex MINLP. Now, as I said before, in order to solve MINLP problems of the non-convex form, we need to, unfortunately, implicitly enumerate all local minima, because the problem is non-convex, not only because of the integrality of the variables, but also because of the non-convex functions. We have to enumerate all the local minima. One way to do so, and that's pretty much what happens in MILP, mixed integer linear programming, is to use some sort of divide and conquer approach, a branch and bound approach that allows us to divide the feasible set and explore every subset recursively. Now, in order to apply this divide and conquer approach, we have to make sure that we find a convex relaxation of each subproblem, a convex relaxation of each subset of the feasible set that you end up obtaining by dividing the feasible set, the initial one, in order to find the valid lower bound. You know that when you have an optimization problem, if you find a relaxation, then you find a lower bound. Well, if you find a convex relaxation of that subproblem, then you find a lower bound very easily by just solving a convex problem. So usually the aim of softwares like Qwen, like the one that that we have developed, is that of finding linear relaxations or convex relaxations so that we can find valid lower bounds relatively easily. So in principle, if you want to develop a solver for that type of problem, you only need two things. I mean, that those two things will be sufficient to end up with a solver that is not necessarily very efficient, but that at least gives you an optimal solution in a finite number of steps, depending on some conditions on the solver. But the main thing you need is a procedure for finding a linearization, a convex relaxation, sometimes a linear relaxation, of the original problem, which will give you a lower bound. And another very important component is a procedure that allows you to split, to divide into the feasible set, the set of feasible solutions, in order to apply recursively the search on those two feasible solutions. I'm not sure if I did the right assumption, but I'm assuming here that everybody knows what a branch and bound approach is. Did I make the right assumption? Okay, very quickly. This is the feasible set. The feasible set is, suppose that we only have this feasible set, we don't have constraint. Let's suppose we have an objective function and it's non-convex. What the branch and bound does is the following. Well, I can probably come up with a lower bound for the problem, for the general problem, let's say it's equal to 5. And then I can find a feasible solution whose associated value is, say, 17. What branch and bound does is divide the feasible set into two subsets and reapplies recursively the same search to both the left subset and the right subset. So once we get to this subset, we'll have to probably divide it, obtain, again, lower bounds and upper bounds and so on and so forth. So it is it's a recursive procedure, but it's proven to converge in under very mild assumptions. And It's something that is very well known in mixed integer linear programming, but it's also something that has to be used in mixed integer nonlinear programming. So basically what you need, as I said before, for this type of procedure to work, you only need some sort of convex relaxation to find lower bounds, and then you have to have a procedure for dividing the feasible set. There are usually very useful add-ons that you have to add, otherwise your program will not converge, and those are heuristics for finding feasible solutions to this upper bound. And this is also very important, a heuristic that allows you to compress to reduce the bound, the bounding box, as much as you can in order to limit the set of feasible solutions only to those that are actually interesting for the problem. Now, let's try to get in a little more in detail on what a linearization, a convexification of a problem looks like. That is, let's try to understand how we get a problem like this that is ugly to look at because you have no idea how to get a lower bound from it. And let's try to see how we get a lower bound. Now, the first operation we have to perform on this initial ugly problem is something called reformulation. So by reformulation, I mean we add a bunch of new variables and we rewrite this problem as an equivalent problem where the objective function is the last variable, the last new variable that we added. And we have a bunch of new constraints that are written like this. That is, each new constraint will be something on the form xk equal to theta k of all the other variables. The only difference between this previous model and that is that first we have a bunch of new variables, and second, and that's usually the useful thing, that these theta k functions are relatively simple. They are atomic functions, if we want to call them like that. They are sines, cosines, logs, square, cube, whatever you want. The important thing is that these theta functions be very, very simple functions, whereas the f and the gi's can be any sort of expressions you want. Now, given that we just added a bunch of new variables and we define these new variables as simple functions theta k, simply means that we did not change anything in a problem. The problem P is exactly equivalent to problem P naught. So we didn't obtain anything convex here. We, in fact, kept all the non-convexities we had before. So we didn't. We simply transformed the problem because it will be more useful later. Now, once we have this problem, the reformulation, which once again is nothing simpler or more complicated than the previous problem, it's exactly equivalent to the previous problem. Once we do that, well, now we can focus on the single constraint xk equal to theta k of x1 through xk minus 1. That is, we can take the single constraints, single nonlinear constraints, given that the theta k can be any possible function, and we try to come up with a linearization with a set of linear constraints that form a relaxation of that single nonlinear constraint. That is, if we can replace this ugly nonlinear constraint with a bunch of linear constraints of this form, then we can rewrite this problem by inserting these linear constraints, and we get a linear problem. Well, an MILP problem, at least. A problem that has still some non-convexity in the integer variables, but that at least is not nonlinear any longer, which is usually very, very useful, given that now you simply have to relax integrality and you get the lower bound almost for free. Well, it's not for free, but anyway. So the important step here is that of taking this function, this nonlinear, and given that it's an equality constraint, it's a non-convex constraint, and transform it into and replace it by a set of linear constraints. How does that happen? Well, let's consider one simple constraint. Let's suppose that we managed to break down all the constraints, and we ended up with a new variable, let's call it x2, which is a function theta of x1, and that function will be the cube. So x2 is defined as x1 to the cube. That simply means that we basically want to find a convex superset of this set here. The set of points x1, x2 in R2, such that x2 is equal to x1 cubed, within the bounds defined on x1 that are L1 and L1, L1 and U1, sorry. So in principle, we are looking for a set that is a superset of this non-convex set, the convex set defined by the red curve between L1 and U1. That red curve, that subset of this red curve, is clearly a non-convex set, and we want to find a convex superset of that. So here, for instance, you find this could be an example. This shaded area could be an example of a convex relaxation of it, and we will be fine with that. If we replace this constraint with this, with the constraint defining this shaded area, we would get a convex relaxation. Well, clearly, we given that we want to find a tight relaxation, we want to find a convex relaxation that is as tight as possible. Usually, you are interested in a convex set that looks like this, but not necessarily. You probably never find it. So you usually just find this linear relaxation, and usually you are happy with that. The good thing about linear relaxations is that, well, now you ended up with a bunch of linear constraints and you only have integer variables, which means that now you can apply a branch and bound algorithm, and by continuously solving linear problems in each node of the branch and bound tree, you take advantage of all the nice things that happen with linear programming. That is, you can resolve, you can use warm start and stuff like that. So let me give you another example, a little more involved. Let's suppose that we want to do the whole reformulation and linearization steps. So we start from this ugly constraint with a very complicated left-hand side. Reformulation simply does the following. It breaks down all this left-hand side, and it breaks it down by creating new variables. That is, we'll create one new variable x3, which is defined as x2 cubed. And then given that this part in parentheses will be substituted by x3 plus 5, now I define a new variable x4, which will be equal to x3 plus 5. If I do so, well, this, if I carry out the whole thing, I do what I called before a reformulation. That is, I now introduce a bunch of new variables, x3 through x7. X3 is defined as x2 cubed, as I said. X4 is equal to x3 plus 5. X6 is equal to x1 squared. That's something to substitute this quantity here, and so on and so forth. Once I define x7 as the product of x6 and x5, that used to be the x1 squared times the logarithm, I simply have to impose that x7 be greater than or equal to 8. Once again, this is only a reformulation. I didn't do anything. But now I can do the following. Well, given that x3 is equal to x2 cubed, I have to replace this ugly, non-linear, non-convex constraint with a bunch of linear constraints. I only write two here, but you can usually add as many as you want. And you do the same with all the other constraints. This is linear already, so we don't need to do anything. This is a logarithm. You have to add another bunch of constraints. I added four here, although there's just two written. Another two here for the square, another couple here for the product, although you need four of them, in fact. And then you simply copy this x7 greater or equal than 8. So the whole reformulation linearization thing is concluded here, and if anything, I can say anything, but the most important thing I have to say is that now the set of points x1 through x7 satisfying these equations here is for sure contained in the set of points x1 through x7 that satisfies these linear constraints, which means I can get a lower bound. So this is one of the first things we wanted to conclude as soon as I started working on this project, and so we call this the software that was doing this type of thing QEN, and QEN is simply an acronym for convex over and under envelopes for nonlinear estimation. It's now a full-blown project in the CoinOR repository for open source optimization software. And By now, Qwen is a full-blown branch and bound procedure that implements the reformulation and linearization technique that we just saw, and is able to solve MINLP problems of a certain mid-size. It implements a couple of things. It not only implements linearization of convex functions, that is the procedure I just talked about, it also implements cut generators, heuristic for finding feasible solutions, branching rules, and bound tightening, another very important procedure. just to continue in this shameless advertisement, it uses code from other, well, it's free anyway, so I'm not doing anything here. So Qwen started by using other CoinOR projects. It uses a branch and bound procedure called CBC, which is another open source software in CoinOR. CGL for cut generation. CLT is an LP solver, which is a pretty good one. IPOpt as an NLP solver, and it uses that to find feasible solutions. And Lago, which is another software that is used for computing solutions of quadratic programming problems. I won't show you how to download or use it, but it's you can probably just Google Qwen and you will find it anyway. But its main page is at the project.coinoir.org page. It can be downloaded using SVN for those of you who know Subversion, and it's also for those of you who don't want to take the pain of downloading and compiling it. There's also an interface on the NEOS page for optimization. So you just go to this page over here, and then you input your AMPL model, and you will get as an output the output that Qwen would have while solving the problem you are submitting. So after we have implemented this reformulation and linearization code, what we wanted to do was trying to understand how this branch and bound, how this non-convex problems could be solved. That is, now that we have a way to find a lower bound, which is the whole reformulation and linearization thing, how can we use it in order to find an optimal solution to a non-convex optimization problem? Well, as I said at the beginning, what you need is a divide and conquer approach. That is, what you need is a branch and bound approach. The branch and bound consists of the following. Suppose you have, let's just consider one single constraint. Let's just consider two variables that are linked together by a constraint of the form xj is equal to xi square. So what will happen in every node of the branch and bound tree is the following. Now that you have a restricted bounding box, so now that you have a restricted feasible set, what you do is the following. You have to generate a linear relaxation of the current problem, which for this particular constraint will correspond of this quadrilateral. And then you will solve the linear programming relaxation, once again, to get a lower bound. The lower bound will correspond, for instance, to this point here, x caron y caron, x hat y hat, sorry. And then you look for a feasible solution, if you find any, and given that this solution here is such that xj is not equal to xi square, this solution is infeasible. You're not interested in that. I mean, this is not something you can use as a feasible solution. So one thing you could be interested in is instead, well, why don't we refine the convex relaxation in such a way that this point here is cut? That is, why don't we just separate, why don't we run a separation algorithm that separates this point here from the convex relaxation of the constraint xj equal to xi squared. And this is exactly what happens, that is, we can refine the linearization in this way. Then, well, as happens usually in pretty much most of the branch and bound procedures, that you repeat this step, you find a new solution here, you try to cut it again, you repeat, well, you probably find a better lower bound, and then you repeat this procedure again, and at this point, for instance, you find this point, which is no longer separable. You cannot separate it any longer, which means that now you cannot improve the linearization. All you can do, well, one of the things you can do is instead branch. That is, you can divide the feasible set by imposing a new, by generating two new subproblems. The first subproblem will have xi between this value here and this value here. And the second subproblem will have lower bound on xi here and upper bound here. And then, of course, now that you generated two new nodes of the branch and bound tree, you simply repeat the procedure recursively. So that's pretty much exactly what happens in MILP, except that now we not necessarily have branching on integer variables, but we also have branching on continuous variables, which is a whole lot of a different thing to do because you have, for instance, it's not intuitive to think about finiteness guarantees, given that at least if you have integer variables and if they are bounded, you know that the branch and bound will converge because you have a finite number of nodes. Well, in MINLP, that's not necessarily the case because you may be able to branch on an infinite set of values. There's all the rational numbers in this interval, which means that it might not be the best thing to do. However, there are conditions. There is very nice result by McCormick, and which dates back to the 70s, that simply says, well, if your relaxation is good enough, then this algorithm is going to converge in a finite number of steps, which is extremely good, given that you simply have to make sure that the linear relaxation here is exact at the extreme values of the bounding box, that is, at the extremes of the interval. I don't know how much time I have, but basically, well, as I said before, the branching rule simply is necessary when you want to make sure that you eliminate this solution here, which is not feasible. You have to branch in order to obtain two new subproblems, both of which exclude the non-feasible solution that you found by the lower bounding procedure. There's plenty of ways to do branching, branch and bound. I'll probably skip over the next few slides, and I'll just mention that there are two main problems here. As with branch and bound for mixed integer linear programming, what usually happens is that you have to make sure that you find a very good branching variable, and there are quite a few techniques for that. So Malani and Sahinidis developed a very nice technique called violation transfer, which selects the best branching variable by looking at the distance with the distance to the closest feasible point. There's a bunch of variants of the strong branching approach, which is also something very efficient, given that it allows you to be a little more scientific and less heuristic on the choice of the branching variable. And then the second fundamental problem, which is a problem here, given that we don't have integer variables, is the selection of the branching point, xi. Now, again, there's a bunch of ways to do that. I won't really discuss that. So far we have discussed two things. One is the reformulation and linearization thing, and that's, as we saw, necessary for finding lower bounds. The second part is finding good the motivation behind branching and the way we could do branching. There's another very important thing that mixed integer nonlinear programming solvers use a lot, and that I have to say comes from a somewhat different area of operations research, which is constraint programming. There's a bunch of nice bound tightening, bound reduction rules that have been developed in discrete mathematics by the people in constraint programming, and they have been exchanged, if you guys wish, or copied by the operations research community. But they proved to be extremely useful for mixed integer nonlinear programming because of one very, very simple reason. The quality of the lower bound you get from reformulation and linearization very, very much depends on the bound of the variables. So the tighter the bounding box, the smaller the bounding box you have, the better the lower bound. So it's very important to really try hard and reduce the bounding box as much as you can in order to find a good lower bound and in order to be able to, well, terminate the branch and bound as soon as possible. I'll just very briefly focus on the two most important of them that are called feasibility-based bound tightening and optimality-based bound tightening. Both of them are extremely intuitive. Feasibility-based bound tightening relies on the nonlinear links between the variables and the function they are associated with. So usually if you have a variable xi defined as h as a function hi of the other variables, you can look at the bounds on all the arguments and infer a new bound on xi and vice versa. So given a bound on xi, given a lower and an upper bound on xi, you can infer new bounds possibly on all of the arguments of this function. So a very stupid example is here. Suppose that x one is defined as equal to x squared. If x is between minus 2 and 3, well, clearly, it's pretty easy to see that x1 is for sure between 0 and 9. So I can always say that x1 will be any feasible solution of the problem will have x1 between 0 and 9. I can do the opposite, of course. If x2 is equal to another variable, y squared, and I know that x2, for some reason, for a branching rule, for another reason, is constrained to be less than or equal to 5, then this implies that x is between, sorry, this should have been a y. I always forget to correct this. So this should be a y, and y is, this implies that y is between minus square root of 5 and the square root of 5. So this is something that is very simple to implement, in fact, and it has been extremely useful in mixed integer linear programming, where you basically need to tighten the variable bounds, especially when they are integer variables. As I said before, there's a lot of literature on this. You may find it under the name of interval analysis and bound reduction, domain reduction, but that's something that overlaps between mathematical programming and constraint programming, the mathematical programming and the constraint programming communities. Let me skip on this example. The second type of bound tightening is known under the name of optimality-based bound tightening, and it says the following. Suppose you have a linearization, which we found through all this very long and complicated procedure, and let's just say it can be called AX less than or equal to small a. Well then, if you are interested in a lower bound on xj, then you can say, well, given that this is a relaxation, I'm sure that whatever feasible value of xj, the lower bound on xj will be for sure no smaller than the minimum of x of j, so the result of an optimization problem where xj is the objective function and ax less than or equal to small a is the set of feasible solutions. And the same holds for its upper bound. So the upper bound will for sure be not more than the maximum of xj subject to the same linearization constraints. Now clearly this is, experimentally speaking, this is usually a good technique. It gives you pretty good bounds and usually better than the bounds given by feasibility-based bound tightening, which we saw in the previous slide. However, big problem is if you have n variables, you have to solve two LPs, two linear programming problems for each variable. You end up having to solve two n LPs just because you want to reduce the bounding box on the problem. This is usually something that is done at the root node of a branch and bound tree, but it's usually not repeated at other nodes of the branch and bound tree, simply because it takes too much time. So it's very useful at the beginning. It's avoided in general at the other nodes of the branch and bound tree. So after we coded all these things, so branching rules, bound tightening, and a bunch of other stuff, we wanted to compare Qwen with a commercial solver. Let me remind you that Qwen is open source, so you can... And it's in fact under the CPL, the Common Public License, which means you can use it, you can download it, you can modify it, you can sell it, you can do whatever you want with it, and You can modify the source code, and the source code is, as I said, completely available and it's downloadable. But we wanted to compare Qwen with one of the state-of-the-art software packages for MinLP. Baron has been created some time, and I think 10 to 15 years ago, and it was started by Nick Sahinidis, and a lot of work has been done on the code by Mohit Ramalani. Its structure is very similar to that of Qwen. That is, it's a branch and bound. The linearization technique is similar to that of Qwen, although it implements different procedures. It uses external LP solvers and NLP solvers. Usually they are Cplex and Minus. And we wanted to compare Baron, that uses violation transfer as a branching technique, with Qwen equipped with the reliability branching, which is a nice variant of strong branching. I won't show you a lot of tables. That is simply because Qwen doesn't beat Baron all the time, unfortunately. For instance, the first table tells you that for this set of instances, this is the number of variables, this is the number of integer variables, this is the number of constraints. We compared Qwen's time and the upper bound. So if the number in this column is not within parentheses, it's the time taken to solve. If it's within parentheses, it's because we couldn't get an optimal solution within 2 hours, and we just put in the lower bound we found. Same holds for Baron. So you can see here that the green highlighted instances are the ones for which the corresponding algorithm won, kind of, which means that at least for this subset of problems, that version of Qwen, which I have to admit is now at least 1 year old, is not as efficient as Baron. So for this is the bad news. Now the good news are coming. That is, well, there are a couple of instances where Qwen in fact behaves much better than Baron. Of course, the thing is, clearly the difference in performance depends very, very much on the structure of the problem and on the procedures that the Baron uses and the procedures that Qwen uses, of course. So for this bunch of instances, for instance, Qwen does better and Baron, but Baron and Qwen pretty much do the same thing. There's some sort of imbalance. Sometimes Qwen does better, sometimes Baron does better. But the nice thing that we notice is that after including all the techniques that I talked about, we could already try to kind of compete with Baron. I also have to say that this is an older version of Baron. So these tests are not exactly up to date. They are I didn't test them yesterday. So it should be my duty to go back and try to instead compare the latest version of Qwen with the latest version of Baron. So enough with description. What I wanted to say about Qwen is also the following thing. Qwen was born as a project that wanted to not only develop a solver for MINLP, that is, it not only wanted to develop a solver that was able to solve MINLPs, but I actually think that the most important focus there was that to develop a solver that could be expanded by the operations research community. That is, the code, which is now, I think, around 50,000 lines of code, is, as I said, open source. And what I think is one of the best features of Qwen is that being open source, it can be modified. So it has been created with the intention of letting the operations research community add features to it, or even simply to just download it and modify it to anyone who's interested in MinLP, which simply means that what we wanted Qwen to be was some sort of flexible MinLP solver, something that was really easy to modify, customize, adapt, generalize, extend. And the structure of the code itself, if you take a look at the code, is sort of modular, so that if you are a researcher in the area and you come up with an idea, for instance, for a bound tightening technique, It's just a matter of downloading the code and adding your code for bound tightness. You don't have to develop your own branch and bound technique. You already have something that is mildly efficient as Qwen. So this really has been an effort that was towards developing something that was useful that could be extended and could be generalized more than an effort to develop a very efficient solver. So as the project manager, I did some extension work myself, and there are a few extensions we are working on currently. There's an extension that we completed a few months ago already, and that's for generating disjunctive cuts. Disjunctive cuts, as you probably know if you are in mixed integer linear programming, are cuts that can be generated as inequalities that are valid for both sides of a disjunction. They are very well known in MILP. Deriving them for MINLP was not very difficult, and some work has been done before by other people in the MINLP area, namely Anurit Saxena, John Lee, and Pierre Bonamy. So we just followed in their path, and we came up with a procedure to develop disjunctive cuts. We are currently working on heuristics. Me and Giacomo Nannicini and Timo Berthold from ZIP Berlin are working on two heuristics. There's a nice work that has been carried out by Jim Ostrowski at Waterloo for symmetry breaking constraints. It's a theory that has been developed for mixed integer linear programming that has been, it's easy to extend to MINLP. So what he has done so far is try to extend the code in order to handle symmetry breaking. And then there's some other bound tightening techniques we are developing together with Leo Liberti. There's one thing I forgot to put here, which is, in fact, kind of important. We are also currently developing a parallel version of Qwen, that is a version that can be run on a Condor machine with at least, the tests we've been doing so far are on a couple of hundred, 500, 600 processors, and it's something that is extremely experimental, even more experimental than Qwen is, but it's given good results so far. So I'll probably skip on this. Let me just briefly mention one last thing. There's another extension that we are almost done with, which is, I think, the prototype of the kind of extension we would like for Qwen to have. That is an extension that deals with a very specific set of constraints, that is a set of quadratic constraints. Suppose you have a very specific MINLP, which is usually called mixed integer quadratically constrained quadratic programming problem. That is, you have to minimize a function that is quadratic, defined as x transpose q naught x plus a naught transpose x, subject to a bunch of quadratic constraints. The q i's are not positive semi-definite, which means that this problem is clearly non-convex. There's a bunch of literature in the area that tries to come up with nice relaxations on it that simply consists of the following. Well, if you have a non-convex quadratic form here, what you could try to do is to apply blindly reformulation and linearization. So you would have to apply, you have to generate a new set of variables that you would call, for instance, yij, let me call them capital xij, that are defined, this is the reformulation part, xi times xj. Well, if you do this, you end up with a bunch of new variables, n square variables, in fact, that you can substitute back into the objective function, and you obtain some sort of linear optimization problem, where q naught is multiplied, this is the term-by-term product. So you multiply every element of the matrix Q naught times the every element xij of the matrix of the new variables. So what you end up with is this reformulation where you have a linear objective function, a set of linear constraints, and then the ugly nonlinear constraint that says, well, x, capital X, the matrix of new variables, has to be equal to x times x transpose. It's something you can easily come up with if you just write down this set of constraints for all I and all j. Now, this constraint here is non-convex, so you didn't really do much. We simply reformulated the problem. We didn't come up with any linearization. But this means this constraint can be transformed into into the intersection of two constraints. It is. If this is the case, then it must be x minus xx transpose positive semi-definite. And the opposite is also true. So minus the same matrix has to be positive semi-definite. This constraint is non-convex, and we don't want to deal with that. It's very hard to deal with, so we just relax it. This constraint is instead convex, that's simply because using the Shor complement, you can rewrite this constraint here as a constraint that imposes one new matrix X tilde to be positive semi-definite. Now, what you could do then, you just reformulated a non-convex problem as a mixed integer, or if there are no integer variables, we don't really care. You just formulated this problem into a semi-definite programming problem. Now, given that we didn't want to develop semi-definite solvers, there's a bunch of very good ones already. What we did was simply the following. Given that this is your new set of variables, what you can do is simply impose one of the definitions of positive semi-definiteness by simply saying, take any vector A and say, well, this is going to be positive semi-definite if and only if for any A you have A transpose X tilde A greater than or equal to 0. That is, these guys are linear constraints. And even though you cannot add all of them because there's infinitely many of them, what you can do is separate them. What we did was, in fact, to use and expand and generalize a procedure that was already proposed by Sherali and Fraticelli and has been extended and generalized by Karthik Krishnan and John Mitchell and by a couple of other people in order to separate these types of cuts. Well, it's very easy to see that in order to separate these cuts, all you have to do is to solve a minimum eigenvalue problem. That you simply have to take the current value of x tilde in the linear relaxation and find its minimum eigenvalue. And once you have that, you're able to come up with a cut. Okay, I may just stop here. So I hope you got an idea of what Qwen does, and I hope you got an interest in downloading or using Qwen, given that it's easy to use, given that it's already on the Neo servers for optimization. But if you need extra information, feel free to talk to me. Otherwise, just Google Qwen, and you will probably find these two websites as the results. I'll stop here, and thank all these people for their involvement in Qwen. Thank you very much.